Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Wasp Report. My name is Alex Chinnery. I'm joined, as ever, by my good friend, Mr. Rob Sutton. Rob, how you doing?
Yeah, Monday evening recording this week for us. Apparently there was some news out of Wasps today.
Yeah. Apparently there's a player on the move, which is...
I didn't see that coming at all.
No, it floored me. Completely floored me, that news. Of course, Elliot Daly is on his way. We don't know where yet, but we do know where, and it's Sarri's. Despite Bristol's best efforts to announce a player and make everyone believe it was Elliot Daly, it was Dave Atwood. It was just before we came on air. Bristol Bears actually caused us to delay recording of the podcast.
Just in case.
I mean, that's quite understandable because obviously they're a lot more important than we are. But I'm not actually going to talk too much about Elliot Daly. I think we've given our thoughts on this situation. And we'll talk more about the players that are leaving towards the end of the season. You know, it will probably be a summer show where we go over some memories of these players and when we know everyone that's going. And I think that's the better way to do it. Before we get on to the weekend's action, again, a couple of apologies. I've got a throat issue. You can probably tell, you can probably hear. I must talk too much because I seem to have had a perpetual sore throat this winter. I've also had the decorators in, which means my door's open. So if you hear any background noise, yeah, sorry. Can't shut it. It's wet paint. So that's so professional, aren't we?
We are. We really are.
Just the most professional podcast out there. Third disclaimer, we're not going to talk about the Premiership Rugby Cup because, quite frankly, I could not give a shit about the Premiership Rugby Cup. There is your analysis. Plus, the rugby that was played this weekend in the Six Nations was so good.
Yeah.
I can't remember a better opening weekend for a long, long time.
Absolutely. It started Friday night with sort of a crazy game in Paris. Even the Italians scored some nice tries. We had it all.
I want to talk about that game in Paris to start because coming into 2019, I think the form that Wasps have been in this year has allowed me to rekindle my love of international rugby. I've been down on England for most of Eddie Jones's tenure. I'm not a huge fan of the way he goes about his business, the way he conducts himself, the way he treats his players. I'm just not a huge fan of him. But I'm all in now. I'm all in as a huge England fan again. And it was around the autumn. I don't quite know what it was. Maybe it was just everyone writing us off. Because there's so much talent in this England group. And we saw them build in the autumn. And they came out and obviously destroyed Ireland this weekend. But yeah. Going back to the point I was trying to make on Friday night. There is nothing as beautiful as a France side in full flow. Offloading out the tackle. Playing at speed. Playing with flair and with the crowd noisy behind them, the rattling stands at the Stade de France. It was just magical. A magical first half of the game for the Six Nations. And I think if France can somehow replicate that 40 minutes over the whole 80, they'd beat anyone in the world.
But it is replicating that, and I can now see France not playing that well again this tournament. They're just sensational. Some of the guy at seven, forgot his name, was unreal. He was everywhere. And like you said, the atmosphere, even though it wasn't full, was unbelievable as well.
The French fans just make so much noise, and they're such good fans. Every time we go away to France, it's a fantastic time because they're just rugby people. They are. They love the game so much, but they care about it being played in a good way. And it was summed up. Thomas Castagnier on the BBC before the game was asked, but I think, I can't think, it was Gabby Logan. I think it was Gabby
Invers.
Logan.
No, it was Invers.
Asked him about winning the game. What was important? What could get the French public back in connected again with this French side? And the answer was the best answer I've ever heard. It came back, it's not enough to win. We have to win well. We have to play well. And for 40 minutes, they were brilliant. They were just, they tore Wales to shreds.
Yeah.
And Wales had no answer.
To be honest, Wales still didn't have much answer in the second half, to be honest. They were gifted 14 points, and that decided the match. So, but the thing is, from a Welsh perspective, they've got the win, and that's probably all they care about this week. And they've now basically got to get through this game because, I mean, you know what their media's like. They're already looking ahead to that England game. So for Warren Gatland, he's sort of the master at playing stuff down. He's got to keep everything, sort of keep a lid on everything for this game against Italy, get through it, and then focus on what is going to be a massive game in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I agree. Italy could give them some problems because, and we'll come on to the Italy game in a minute, but they were just so uninspiring, Wales. Mm. There was nothing there. It was the polar opposites in the first half were so easy to see. You had on one side the French playing such fabulous rugby. They were going for it, putting pace on the ball, creating overlaps, drawing men in. And then on the other side, you had Wales, who were doing nothing of the sort. It was slow ball, kick.
I think,
and that was with Anscombe at 10, who's supposedly the more free-flowing 10 than Dan Biggar. And it didn't improve when Biggar came on.
I think it showed the importance for them, though, of Liam Williams at fullback. Everything good about them in an attacking sense came through Williams at 15.
Yeah, I agree. It is, for me, it's a very similar situation to England with the fullback, because Lee Halfpenny's obviously done such amazing things for Welsh rugby, but you have to start Liam Williams at 15 because he just gives you so much more of a spark, and he was the only spark in this game. Let's not beat about the bush. I know George North scored 2 tries, but they were given to him. All he had to do was collect the ball and run under the posts.
Yeah.
And
I think what the French showed is if you stop the Welsh back row, you pretty much stop Wales. Their back row is so important to them.
Yes, I agree. And they were bullied by France. Mm. Absolutely bullied. And it took a monumental collapse from the French for Wales to get this win.
Only the French would collapse like that as well.
and that is exactly true. You know, I think is it Vamahina, the second row?
Yeah, he didn't even know his captain.
He didn't even know his captain. How can you not tell someone that they're the new captain on the field? I know sometimes it happens. Your captain goes off, maybe your vice-captain goes off as well if they're both in the forwards. And perhaps you haven't planned for who the third guy is. You would have thought they would have done, but it is the first game in the Six Nations. So, they might not have been together that long in camp. There are other things they're focusing on, fine. But when your vice-captain goes off, someone's got to get a message on. Because it was obvious that Vamahina wasn't ready to make that decision.
Yeah.
And it just felt... Oh, I really thought the French were going to do it. And for the health of the championship, it would have been brilliant if they had done.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly from an English perspective as well, given what happened in Dublin.
Yes. And, you know, that first half really scares me as an England fan. It really scares me as an England fan. Because if they can carry some of that momentum into the World Cup...
Oh, absolutely. They're always a dangerous team.
They always peak well. Yeah, they peak well at World Cups as well. They have always been there and thereabouts.
Well, the thing is, they were a shambles coming into 2011 and made the final.
Yeah, and it was a very similar style to what they play now.
Yeah.
Big forwards, talented backs, with a good offloading game, and a group of players who, you know, maybe are better than the sum of their parts on paper at times. I actually thought Camille Lopez had a fabulous game at 10.
Mm.
And it's really good seeing him back after all the injury worries and injury troubles he's had over the past few years. It was great to see him in a blue shirt running things well. You know, just making it look easy at times. He looks really not French. He looks like he looks like a Kiwi farmer from north of the South Island, which isn't easy to say. God, that's not easy to say either. I'm really tired. I stayed up and watched the Super Bowl last night and only got about 2 hours sleep. So I apologise because words not good at the minute. Really not good.
Stumbling much like the Rams did.
Yes, well, I don't know why I stayed up. It was just the most awful game I've seen in a long time. And I enjoy defensive football. Like, I like defence. I like the way it's played. But, oh, my days. It was tough. It was a tough watch. For me, neither of these sides are going to really push for the title, I don't think. I don't think Wales are good enough. I'm almost ready to say that after just one game. Because I just don't think their problems are fixable with the players they've got.
I'd like to write them off, but I don't know. They're tough to beat in Cardiff. England have got to make sure that roof's open.
Yeah, but I didn't see enough. I really didn't. And I think someone like Johnny May, with the skills he's got, the pace he's got, the ability to step, going up against someone like George North will scare the shit out of George North because he can't defend. He can score tries, and he's got a great stroke record. Yeah, a lot of those tries come from 10 metres out, and yeah, he's just finishing them off. But fair play to him. He's got a fantastic strike record. But he can't stop anyone to save his life.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. And also, we've seen, obviously, Christian Wade made him look foolish a couple of times, didn't he, at the Rico? So, Johnny May was unbelievable. That's the best I've ever seen Johnny May play in a rugby match.
Yeah, under the high ball, he was fabulous. Yeah, in attack, he was dangerous whenever he touched the ball. He seems to gain a yard of pace every year. It's crazy.
Mm.
And he's got that poacher's instinct to score tries that every great winger has.
Yeah.
Let's talk about England. Actually, coming on from the Johnny May chat, obviously we've got England-France coming up and then England-Wales after, so it's quite a nice little segue into the England-Ireland game, considering we can talk about the two teams we were just talking about as well. I think that's England's best win since we beat the All Blacks at Twickenham.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Certainly England's best performance under Eddie Jones, and their best performance in the Six Nations for years.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those wins that you, if you look back and you look at the results that the team in 2003 got in that year running up to the World Cup, where they went down under and they beat Australia and New Zealand down in Australia and New Zealand. They came back, they had a fabulous autumn where they beat teams, they kept beating teams, and then they came in and they won a Grand Slam, and they rode that momentum all the way into the World Cup. Now, I'm not saying this England team is going to do that. It's foolish to say that at the minute. I think that Ireland and New Zealand, when on the day, are probably the better sides when you look at the last few years. But what I will say is if England can recreate that performance or a similar type of intensity and clinicity in their performance for the next four games in this championship, take it into the World Cup, take that kind of form into the World Cup, no one will want to play us come quarterfinal time.
Exactly. And it was just the physicality in defence was on a level I've not seen from England probably since the days of Woodward and co. It was just, the line speed was just phenomenal, and so many standout players. Even with his yellow card, Tom Curry was brilliant. Mark Wilson tackled himself to a standstill. Itoje was excellent before he came off. Carl Sinks had put himself about. The Vunipolas as well. You could pretty much go, no England player had a bad game.
No, I don't think so.
It was a proper, proper team effort.
Mako Vunipola made 27 tackles. Made more tackles than anyone else on the field, with the exception of Mark Wilson, who also made 27.
Yeah, that's unbelievable work.
27
right?
Tackles. And he was only on for 60 minutes.
Mako?
Yeah. Was he?
Or did he 75 did he played.
Oh, okay. But he wasn't on for the whole game.
Yeah.
And he just puts himself about, and it's not often work that you see. Yeah, it's not that shrouded in glory, but he is world class. He is quite probably the best player in the world at his position.
Oh, definitely. He's so important. He's so important to both England and Saracens.
Yeah, he completely outplayed Todd Furlong on the other side.
And that's an ending feat.
That was true across all positions. Mm. You look at Mark Wilson, completely outplayed Peter Omani. And you saw it in Omani. He had never, at least not for two or three years, hasn't faced anyone like that. He hasn't faced any kind of performance like that. That's why he got so chippy. It's why Carl Sinclair was able to get under his skin. And then when Omani bit, when he had a go at Sinclair, Sinclair didn't back down. And that was England's performance all day, especially up front. We took him and we mashed Ireland into the ground up front. And that was what won England the game. Or at least it built them the platform to win the game, because to say that was what won them the game is doing a disservice to the guys out in the backs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was just a super, super performance. And we did mention it last week about England being written off and how Eddie Jones would thrive upon that. And he certainly did. And we've both been critical of Eddie Jones, but you've got to say he delivered an absolute masterclass.
That was perfect. That was the perfect England performance. And I have been saying it for a month. And I'm not being an after-timer. It seems like I am sitting here saying it now. But I've said it to everyone at work last week. I've been saying it to you, Rob. I've been saying it to my old man who was out there in Dublin. We're going to do them. I just had this feeling that we were going to do them. And we did. I just knew England were going to front up.
When the team came out, I'd say I was quietly confident of possibly nicking it. I didn't expect to win by 12 points, and that flattered Ireland. And obviously to score four tries as well for the bonus point, which could be very important in a couple of weeks' time.
Absolutely. And a lot of those tries came from brilliant back play. Henry Slade answered every single one of his critics of his past performances in England shirt. He has that 13 shirt now. That's his to lose. Because he came up against the form team in the world and he dominated.
Yeah. I think England have stumbled. Well, I'm not sure if they've stumbled across it, but I think they've found their 10, 12, 13 for the World Cup.
I'm so worried about Tuilagi. He was so good. Like, he just put himself about. He made intelligent plays. He burst open Ireland. He completely disrupted their game plan, both in attack and defence. He drew two or three men in. And when you open up space and you've got players like Slade, Daly, Noel, May, all on the outside, all ready to contribute in open space, you're going to score tries. And in the international rugby, it's the same as Champions Cup rugby. At the top level, you have to score tries to win games. And if you want to win games in defence, you have to stop the other team scoring them. It's very basic. But it's a tries game now. You're not going to win games 15-9. You're just not. Teams are too potent at the minute. And it's much better to watch.
Yeah.
Obviously, England... I say England got lucky for one try, but it was cancelled out by a bit of sublime skill for another that really was quite possibly the best thing I've ever seen on a rugby pitch. The first one, Elliot Daly's little chip kicked through and he just followed it and kept on following it and kept on following it. If you're a parent or if you're a young lad watching, if you're a parent of a young lad watching that game, that's why you never give up on the ball.
Exactly.
You just chase and chase and chase and chase and chase. And Stockdale spilt it and Daly fell on it. And it's a great try. But to see the space...
Was a great kick.
That's it. The presence of mind to turn Stockdale, to make him have to drop on the ball before his line so that he's trying not to put the ball down. If Stockdale drops on that ball and it's in the try area, there's no fumble of it because he can just drop on it. What he has to do is try and drop on it, slide, and somehow get up and try and run it back out of the try area.
England's kicking game was on a level I haven't seen before from England.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes back down to Owen Farrell, who may be... I think you've got to put him in the conversation as the best fly off in the world.
Yeah.
He doesn't do the things that Beauden Barrett does. I would say he doesn't do the things that Johnny Sexton does in terms of certain skills to open up a game. But in terms of a game manager, as someone who can get their team over the line, who can marshal their team to the win, I'm not sure there's anyone better in the world at the minute. Yeah, we've just seen Tom Brady take his team, his New England Patriots team, and marshal them to a Super Bowl. Use the players around him in the best way he can to win over and over again. And if I'm looking at another sport comparison for Owen Farrell, obviously he doesn't have the success of a Brady, but his style of play is so similar. And England have got that rich depth of talent around him that they can just say to Owen Farrell, go out there, don't make any errors, put your teammates in a position to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it better than anyone else.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was sensational.
And I thought Young's had a good game. Obviously, I am absolutely appalled that Eddie Jones didn't give Dan Robson his debut. Eddie is clearly biased against Wasps. It's a disgrace.
Terrible.
How an England coach could be so biased against one rugby team is just... beggars belief. It really does. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace to the RFU. It's not like Ben Youngs was playing at a world-class level or England were going for their first win in Dublin and against the team who were probably number one in the world or at least deserved to be. Shut up. Shut up if you think that. Get your head out your arse. Support your country. It's a World Cup year. Dan will get his chance. Dan will get his chance because we'll be 10, 15 points up against France this weekend. And Dan will get his chance.
Yeah. Again, but look at this, though, from Dan's perspective. You either play for... I think George Ford was on the field for 74 seconds, which is when Dan would have come on, or he might well get 15 minutes in front of 82,000 at Twickenham on Sunday.
Yeah,
I know which one I'd rather make my debut. It was a great win for England, but
no,
surely you've got to want to make your debut at home.
Yeah, and even then, you know, he's just going to want to make his debut, to be fair to him. But it wasn't the game. It wasn't the time. It wasn't... There was nothing to gain from putting Dan on in that game.
Yeah.
And it was great man management. It was exactly the right thing to do. Dan will get game time. There's only two scrum halves in this squad. And from what we saw on Saturday, Eddie Jones can't afford for Ben Youngs to get injured.
Exactly.
He just can't do it.
Exactly. And you've got to think as well, even if England are 3 out of 3, I still think Dan will start the Italy game.
Yeah, I do as well.
Because the way it falls, it comes off of a break week. You can then leave Youngs in cotton wool for the last match.
Yeah, and England are going to beat Italy. There's no question about it. Playing anywhere sort of 50% of the level they played out on Saturday, they'll beat Italy.
Yeah.
They need to get Robson game time because he can be a difference maker in Japan, but not if he's not made his debut in a competitive environment. I don't mean making his debut in those pre-World Cup friendly games. He needs to make his debut in this Six Nations, and he needs really to get minutes in 2 or 3 games. And I agree, the start against Italy.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will.
I want to talk a little bit about Ireland, because they were so fancied coming into this game, and they were just bullied, completely bullied. And it's the kind of game, and I spoke about it being a 2003-esque win for England. This was Ireland's big test for me, to show that they had the kind of credentials that England's 2003 winning side had. Because they've beaten New Zealand, but they've only beaten them... I mean, they've beaten them obviously in Chicago and in Dublin. They've won down in Australia, I believe it was, over the summer.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't quite have the credentials yet of that England team. Yes, they're playing very, very well, and their club sides are doing very well. They're dominating everything, if you believe the Irish papers. I think Saracens have something to say about that. But and this was their chance to really show, much like it was Wales' chance on Friday night, to show that they can be taken seriously in the World Cup conversation. And just like Wales failed that audition, I think Ireland failed this one as well. Yes, England played incredibly well. Really, really, really well. But Ireland just did not have enough to compete with a fully charged, fully fit England.
I wonder if the occasion got to Ireland a bit. They didn't deal with being favourites very well.
No, I think you might have got it spot on.
Because, let's be fair, even in the last couple of years, Ireland have gone into those games concerned that they might lose to England. We were 9 points behind them on the handicap mark, if you believe the bookmakers. And I think there was that air of confidence that, you know, they'd not lost at the Aviva in the Six Nations for, was it 6 years, I think? I think it was since England last won there. It was the last time they'd won, they'd lost at home in the Six Nations. So, you know, I don't think they cope very well as favourites. Obviously, when you concede a try as early as they did, that's never an ideal start. But I mean, I don't want to completely write them off, but if you don't win your home games, you don't normally win this tournament.
And they've got such a tricky fixture on Saturday.
Yeah.
Because you're going to Murrayfield and playing in front of an arena full of supercharged Scottish fans who will be right behind their team, who will be right up for it, because they've got that comforting win, that calming win in their first game over Italy. They played for the first hour some beautiful rugby.
Yeah, and it was a good weekend for those who had Blair Kinghorn in your fantasy teams.
Oh, it absolutely was. Nice hat-trick for him. But Ireland have got to go into Murrayfield. They've got to stand there as that crowd sings a cappella the verse of Flower of Scotland. It makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up hearing the passion in that ground.
Yeah.
If you've never been to Murrayfield, especially for England-Scotland, but even for a game like this, Ireland-Scotland, I think, has a very similar vibe, especially nowadays. You've got to go. It should be on every rugby supporter's bucket list, because, and I'm going to get killed for saying this, and I know exactly who's going to come on and kill me on Twitter for saying this, but it's a much better experience than Twickenham. It shits all over Twickenham as a place to go and watch rugby with rugby fans, proper rugby fans. It's unbeatable in how good and how passionate that fan base is. And if Scotland get some sort of early lead, if they put early pressure on Ireland, I fear for Ireland in that game, because you've got Finn Russell, who is playing at the top of his game at the minute. He's not going to be an Owen Farrell. He's not going to manage you through the game in the same way. But he's going to create things that most people watching on just don't think are possible.
Yeah, I agree. Massive test this for Ireland. They got beaten at Murrayfield 2 years ago.
Yep.
I think that was the first weekend they lost up there. So, as you said, the Scots will be right up for this. And I mean, there's a few starting to talk Scotland up as title contenders. I think they'll lose the two away games, but Scotland could really help England win this championship if they could knock over Ireland and Wales at Murrayfield.
I hope that we go into the game, the final game at Twickenham, with it being a Grand Slam decider. I really do. Because
it's not out of the realms of possibility.
I don't think it is. I really don't. I think Scotland can go and win in Paris. I believe they've got to go to Paris, haven't they?
Yeah,
because Wales are coming to town. I believe they can go and win in Paris, and that will give them a huge amount of confidence, because that's the banana skin for me, because they're not good away from home. They've not been good away from home. I think they win this weekend. I really do.
Because Ireland, I do as well.
Ireland have got to score 3 or 4 tries to beat Scotland. I believe so. I believe you do, because you look at the attacking talent in that Scotland back line, the way that Russell plays, the way that Hogg's playing, Kinghorn, Maitland to come back in, all this talent. And Ireland might be without Gary Ringrose, who went off injured. They might be without one or two others.
Stander.
They're not CJ Stander. Keith Earls! is out as well. They could really struggle to score points and put points up on this Scotland team. And
the game a couple of years ago, Scotland roared out the blocks and Ireland had no answer. The game was almost, it's similar in a way to the England game. It does seem as you can get in front of this Ireland team. They're not as good coming from behind.
And possibly, I tweet a lot about Irish journalists. I have been tweeting a lot about Irish journalists the last few weeks. One journalist who is exempt from all of those tweets is Murray Kinsella. He's a fabulous, fabulous follow on Twitter. His analytics work, his writing about Irish rugby is brilliant. It's utterly fantastic. And he posted before the England-Ireland game, Ireland have won 19 of their last 20 games where they were ahead at halftime.
Yeah.
When you flip it, it's a much worse figure. I don't know that one off the top of my head. I just, the 19 of 20 sticks with me because it's such a powerful number, such a big percentage. And I agree. I think if you get that good start, and Scotland are capable, we saw it this weekend against Italy. They roared out the blocks there. They scored 2 tries in 10 minutes. If they can get something like that against Ireland, even if it's just like a 12-3, a 12-6 lead, they're really in with a shot of winning this game.
Definitely. Definitely. Really looking forward to that one. I think that's the game of the weekend this weekend.
I do. And I'm gutted. I'm going to miss it.
Yeah, because I think Wales will get a Roman win. But the Italians did you know, a couple of nice tries towards the end of that game on Saturday against Scotland.
I think
Campagnaro was involved as well.
Yeah, I think the thing that will most please Conor O'Shea about this game is when Italy played well. They were outclassed for an hour against Scotland, but the fact that they had the energy and the contribution off the bench to play really well in the last 20 minutes, which is the period that historically they haven't been able to compete with these teams, will give him a lot, and give them a lot of confidence, I think, going forward. Because it's not a given anymore that if Italy are level with the team at 60 minutes, they're probably going to lose, because they haven't got the talent on the bench, they haven't got the fitness, they haven't got the conditioning. And that is what I've been saying for the whole time that Conor O'Shea's been there. That's what he's going to improve, that kind of thing. He's going to make the clubs better. He's going to get these players playing across Europe in better fitness conditions, in better tactical, making better tactical decisions. It's not just going to fall on Parise, because he's going out, he's picking these young, talented players. You've got to remember, Italy are doing this without possibly their best player at the minute, Jake Pelledri.
And Minozzi as well.
Yeah. They are a really strong outfit, and they're worthy of their place in this tournament. I absolutely believe that. I've always believed that. And I think that Conor O'Shea is laying the foundation for that country to become a power of this game.
I definitely agree with that.
I don't think they're ever going to be on an England, an Ireland or a New Zealand level.
No, but no, I'd agree.
They'll be that top sort of 10 or so teams that there was, the 8 that then expanded to sort of 9, 10, will expand again to 12, 13 teams, I'd imagine, that are consistently fighting for the quarterfinal spots of the World Cup.
Yeah,
it's not going to be a given that you qualify out your group, because there'll be 3 talented teams rather than 2, if you catch my drift.
Yeah. And I reckon they'll fancy the home game against France at the end. Because if France lose a couple more games,
I mean, France could be going into that winless.
Potentially,
Then they'll definitely fancy it.
Yeah.
Because the one area I really worry about with France is if they keep losing, then there might be some sort of blow up in that squad.
Absolutely.
And that
but it wouldn't be a World Cup year without a French blow up, would it? Let's be fair.
No, that's true. And then they have history, of course, in other sports of
the strike in a couple of World Cups ago.
Yeah.
I think that was.
Is it South Africa?
Yes, no. I think it was. No, I think it was 2014, South Africa,
wasn't it? Oh, who cares?
But it was one of them. Certainly one of them.
Looking ahead to this weekend's games, and we've done it a little bit with Ireland, Scotland already, and Wales, Italy. I think Wales will find some sort of mojo this weekend.
Yeah.
I think if they don't, then we might see some sort of change. And I'm not sure quite where that will come from. Rhys Patchell's in the squad, with the possibility of him playing at 10, but
Gareth Davies a start, possibly at 9.
I think that might be the move. And if they get a bit quicker ball, they're not going to be under as much pressure in the forwards, so they might be able to get a better platform for their halfbacks. And Anscombe's a good player, but he's just looked so out of sorts at times this year, both for Cardiff and on Friday night for Wales. And they need a win, and they need to play well this weekend. It's almost a real no-win situation for Wales.
Well, I think that's definitely right.
Unless they were to go out and put 50 points on Italy and not concede any, then we're all back in on them. But if they go out and win but don't play well, then people will continue to ask questions. And if, God forbid, they go out and lose, obviously that's their championship over. Because I think England go to Cardiff and win, because they've done it. A lot of this team did it 2 years ago.
And 4 years ago as well.
And 4 years ago, yeah. So going to Cardiff and winning isn't a monkey on this England team's back.
Well, they've got the big monkey off their back now. We're actually winning in Dublin.
I'd agree. And I think England are favourites for the Grand Slam.
I think if there's going to be a slam, I think it will be England.
Yeah.
Because I think Wales will lose at Murrayfield.
I think Wales will lose two or three times. They've still got to play Ireland. Ireland aren't a bad team just because they lost to us. Yeah, they're still going to take points and win games. I can see them winning minimum three games still.
Game's at the end, isn't it? So that's the Paddy's weekend game. Ireland don't lose that weekend.
No, so. No, not since 2003.
Yeah. Oh, no, they came to Twickenham once. Yeah, a couple of penalty tries. I can't remember what year that was.
I was at that game.
Was that Lancaster?
No, I think it was Eddie Jones's first year in charge. We won the slam, didn't we?
Yes, yes.
It was the most
2016
dour game I've ever seen in my life. It was cold. It was grey. I was surrounded by middle class Six Nations fans in their barber jackets, drinking their 25 pints of beer over the course of the game. The rugby was shit. We defended for most of the game. Elliot Daly actually put in a fucking great hit
debut.
On one of their players. On,
I think that
on
was
debut.
His debut, yeah.
And I just remember coming away. That was it. That was the day where I really fell out of love with England, was that game. And it was, as I say, it was only in the last 6 months or so that I've really got back in love with England and the way England play.
Yeah, looking forward to this weekend. As I said, I think Scotland is the game for me, but I think England will beat France at Twickenham.
Yeah, I'd expect England to beat France at Twickenham. I expect them to do it fairly comfortably. I just think we're better than France. They're more organised. They play better as a team. And although you might, if you look at the two 15s next to one another, you might say even say the French is more talented. They just don't play well as a team. They're not good away from home. And that is a cliche, but it's also proven. French teams don't play well away from home. And I think England will go into Twickenham buoyed by their performance last weekend. They won't want to lay an egg in front of their home fans. And they'll win, and they'll win well. Yeah. And that's what I want to happen, at least. Because I want to see England build on a good performance and show us that they can do that come the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, though, if it was quite scrappy and England pulled away at the end.
Yeah, I can see that. Because I think if the French come with a huge pack and they really put England under pressure in the forwards, because they don't allow England to bully them the way that England bullied Ireland, and England don't get good platform ball, and the backs then look slow, it might take someone like a Dan Robson, who, bless him, has dealt with a shit platform for the past year and a half at Wales. So he could be England's X factor in this game. Because if Youngs can't get front football because his forwards aren't doing their job, bringing on someone like Dan, who's used to his forwards not doing their job and still gets good quick ball away, might unlock this French defence.
Yeah.
I'm dreaming now. We've been going too long. I'm talking myself into things that probably aren't going to happen. It happens a lot. It happens a lot.
It does. It does. I think we did that at the start of the season when we thought Wasps would have a good year. But there we go.
Yeah.
So be it.
Anyway, I think that's just about all we have time for. And next week we will be back, of course, discussing the three Six Nations games, looking ahead to Wasps' crunch matchup against Bristol. If there's anything we really need to talk about, we will jump on before then and give you a quick 20 minutes or so. If there's any news, I don't know if there's going to be any news.
No.
We all expected something to come last week.
Yeah.
I was told by about three different people something was coming last week, and then obviously nothing happened. Ben Vellacott is coming at some point, is going to be announced. Yeah.
I think Naholo is going to Irish. I don't think he's coming here.
I don't think we've got the cap space to sign someone like him.
No, probably not. Not with the other two coming in.
Yeah, I'd like to see us targeting. I like the idea of Max Clark in the centre. I think that's a good signing if we get him. I rate him quite highly as a player. Actually,
he's solid.
He's a solid player, and I'd prefer to have him over Campagnaro. As good as Campagnaro's been, obviously you look at Campagnaro, he's going to go away with Italy in the autumn and in the Six Nations, and Clark's not going away with England. And Clark's English qualified. And I'm not revealing a racist side. We get salary cap breaks for English qualified players. So having someone like a Max Clark in the squad benefits us over a Campagnaro.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Brexit Six Nations started off well because all three winners were from the home nations.
Yeah.
Let's see if that trend continues this weekend, which of course it can, because Wales and Italy aren't playing one another until the final game of the tournament. Maybe we're going to get a prediction right.
Might do.
And in the words of Jeremy Clarkson on that bombshell, time to end the show. Thank you very much for listening. The Wasps Report is an Alex Chinnery Media production. If you don't already, follow us on Twitter. I don't know how you found us if you don't follow us on Twitter, but yeah, enjoy. Thank you very much for listening.